Welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. John, it's a Monday. I shouldn't say we're back. I've been over here for like an hour and a half.
We've been doing some tech prep for upcoming weeks of the Dune Minute. So
Yeah. I know, lots of cables around here right now. Lots of cables and computers.
A lot more than we normally have, yeah.
So, but it's Monday. We're at the start of a new week. We are talking about minutes, starting on minute 50. But before we dive into that, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Good. Braves are up 1-0.
We can't do that. We already did that bit.
Fuck. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Another weekend here. In the Dune Minute headquarters, I suppose, is what we'll call my living room. I don't know.
It's the closest thing to a studio that we have, yeah. So I guess that'll work. But this is cool. Like I'm looking at our waveforms on the TV now instead of just at the laptop that usually sits in front of me. So this is kind of neat. It feels more like a studio.
A little more professional.
Yeah. So
it's amazing what a 20-foot HDMI cable will do for our sense of professionalism.
Well, I promise we'll still have dick and fart jokes, though.
Oh, so, of course.
Any sense of professionalism that brought to this operation will be gone.
Immediately eviscerated. Yeah. Balls will be bad.
The blue balls will be bad, yes. All right, man. Well, let's get into it, because we have... I'm going to do something we haven't really done before. How do you feel about this week? I want to get like a...
It is a week.
I want to get like a preview feeling. How do you feel about it now, and how we feel about it at the end? Let's see if it matches up.
It is certainly a week of the Dune Minute.
True. Technically correct. The best kind of correct.
I don't know, man. Like we'll obviously dive into it. I think personally, some of these minutes could have been condensed a little bit in the movie.
Yeah,
but I understand why they weren't, and we'll talk about that a little more later on.
All right, cool. Well, we'll check back in. This wasn't my favorite week. Anyways, we'll get into it.
Yeah, wait until we talk about Shai Hulud's.
All right. Well, we will start this week off in the appropriate place, right where we left off.
Yeah.
And we left off right at minute 50. So we're talking about minute 50 through 51 today. I have no quote unquote funny quips because this is not a lot of anything. So let's dive into it. We're starting back in the tailing end of the vision that Paul was having as he was waking up with Chani.
Well, he was recounting his dream that Chani woke him up from.
Well, is it a vision or is it a dream?
It was a dream. He was asleep.
Okay. I think those lines are pretty blurred.
Sure. But. He was asleep, and Chani, last week, we ended the week with her saying, "You're having one of, or it's been a while since you've had one of those dreams,
nightmares specifically."
Okay, fair.
So we get the tail end of this dream, and this is really where the meat and potatoes of the dream is. This first like 30 seconds of this minute.
Yeah, we got teased at the end of last week.
Right.
But at least we ended at the end of a sentence. None of this halfway through bullshit.
Yeah. So we're still looking at the back of the woman, and she's walking away from the camera. The camera gives us a wide shot, and we see a bunch of people on the ground, like writhing in agony. And just like crawling on their hands and knees.
Like gasping almost.
Yeah. This to me looked like a very classic representation of one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Pestilence.
Yeah.
I'm thinking specifically, the thing that comes to my mind is the Good Omens show that came out a couple years back.
Yeah.
When they depicted pestilence... The person playing that what would you call that person or
horseman?
The horseman, yeah.
Yeah.
They would just like walk down the, like a street or through like through bushes or something, and everything would just die around it.
Sure.
So it looked like that's what was happening here. the land that this person is walking through is super, super dry and arid.
Yeah, it's not just the typical Arrakis, like, sand dunes desert, but it's that kind of desert that you typically see in, like, pictures representing a desert where the ground is just, like, cracked.
Yeah.
Like a giant scab.
Yep.
It's way more brutal of a desert than what we've been looking at.
Yeah, it is.
Which makes me question, because generally when you have the ground that's split up like that, it's because it's mud that dried in the sun. So where the fuck's that water coming from?
I don't know the answers to this, but yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. Just like caked mud that is cracked on the ground.
Unless it's right around the poles, because our good friend of the show, Dune Navigator Martin,
yeah,
just posted on his Substack, which all of you should go subscribe to, a really interesting article about the ice caps of Arrakis.
I saw it come through. I have not read it yet.
Okay.
I think I may...
Go read it.
Yeah,
there's
I may
some,
do that.
There's some good stuff in there. I don't want to take any of his thunder. But.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that while I have dinner tonight. I'll read over that article.
Fucking nerd.
Okay. Hey, John, you're part of a Dune Minute.
A Dune podcast?
Dune podcast. Yeah.
All right, fair.
Pot, meat, kettle.
All right.
So we get one person kind of gets like a spotlight on the in this dream, not a literal spotlight, but just like a quote unquote close up. We don't see really any defining features of this person, but it is someone who has a very impressive jaw.
Yeah, they're like more than naturally agape than they should be.
Yes, and it's very uncanny valley. And it's super strange. I know it's CGI, so that's not a person actually doing this, but it was very, very strange and it was very unsettling to me.
Sure.
But they open their mouth crazy wide. They're on their hands and knees and they're just, you know, gasping for air or for water or something. They're just
probably
in
a combination
pain.
Of the two.
Yeah. And then we hard cut.
Yeah.
hard cut. Back to the real world, and Paul is looking disheveled, or maybe unsettled is a better word for it.
Well, I mean, in fairness, he was just talking about millions and millions of people starving to death because of him.
Yes.
So anyone with a modicum of a conscience would probably feel some kind of degree of bad because of that.
So Chani is, she's laying next to him, and she basically tells him to lay off the drugs. She says you've had a lot of spice and it's gonna fuck up your sleep patterns, which it clearly is what's happening right now.
Sure.
His dreams are getting weird. He and she thinks it's because of the long exposure to spice.
Now, just to recount, last week we had our time jump in the movie that was indeterminate as to how long Paul had been out with the Fedaiken, long enough that we know that his eyes had transitioned into the eyes of Ibad, that blue within blue. But I did some retroactive research, couldn't find any kind of indicator on how long that takes for the exposure. But clearly,
I think it's dependent on the amount of spice that you take, because we see in prophecy that Lila was put in that chamber.
That's true.
And that was like a very short amount of time that her eyes got fucking blue.
True. Well, we had also, don't even have to go to prophecy. We have this movie, because when Jessica took the water of life and transmuted the poison, she immediately had that cut over. So,
yep. Very true. So it's depend on the exposure level.
Yeah. But the point is that we still, at least up until this point in the movie, don't have any kind of frame of reference for how long it's been.
Right. Right.
We'll have some visual indicators later on next week.
It's less than 9 months.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we could use Jessica's pregnancy as maybe like a very, very rudimentary time.
Sure,
timeline.
Even though they just happened to time jump like 5-6 weeks in a couple seconds.
It's not perfect.
Sure.
But it's all we got right now.
Yeah.
So Chani's just like laying down, listening to this, probably wishing she could get back to sleep.
Same.
And then she sits up and she like kind of rubs his shoulders. And it's a big day. And it is a big day. We'll learn why it's a big day later. But Paul, like when she says this, he kind of like, I don't know if you picked up on this, but he rolled his eyes a little bit. And not in like a shut the fuck up or, you know, kind of derogatory way, but just kind of like an acknowledgement. And he says, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And Chani suggests that they call it off. And Paul immediately goes, no. He's like, nope, we're here. We're doing it. Whatever this is.
Yeah.
He hits her with a classic, I'm fine. Just a beautifully executed, I'm fine. Don't talk about feelings. We're men.
I'm a man. I'm going to suppress all of my feelings and not have any emotions whatsoever.
Exactly. There's no need for it.
Feelings are a waste of time.
And we certainly do not waste time by cutting back out to the desert. So we jump from this scene outside and we see a bunch of Fremen that are gathering on the dunes and they all start to sit down. Chani is sporting a brand new blue headband
that we had never seen before.
Yeah, I dig it. Matches the eyes, makes her eyes really pop. I resonate with this actually. I am a blue eyed person.
As am I.
Whenever I wear a anything in like the robin's egg blue family of colors, makes my eyes pop.
Well, your shirt is almost there right now.
I'm kind of wearing one. Yeah.
I went to a wedding recently, and part of the dress code was like bright, like springtime colors or whatever. So I found a nice baby blue top.
Ooh, lovely.
Made my eyes just fucking boom.
You love it.
Yeah.
You got to know your colors, people. If you don't know what colors make your eyes pop, learn.
Yep.
It helps. I should have lent you my entirely robin's egg blue suit that I have.
No.
That's snazzy, man.
I could not fit into your clothes.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Truth be told, I can't fit into that suit either because your boys put on a few. So all these Fremen are sitting down. Chani's got her blue headband on. And she's looking at something very, very intently.
Now, before we go forward.
Okay.
I have beeves.
Okay.
I have found a continuity error in Dune Part 2.
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Okay. Lay it on us.
Lay
down your beeves.
My beeves getting laid. First shot, we see all of the Fedaiken on the side of the dune. They're all sitting down and everything. They are all fully like settled into place. And Chani is at the bottom of this group of Fedaiken. You know, they're kind of laid diagonally across this dune.
Yeah.
Yet the next shot is Chani walking down the dune to where she would have been in the shot or in the scene, or not the scene, but the shot just before.
Oh, okay.
It's a small continuity error.
Yeah, but I did not even pick up on that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But they had seemingly things in reverse.
Yeah. I was too busy focusing on that headband, man.
Yeah, fair. Kind of our job though to go back, you know, second by second.
Well, you know, sometimes we don't do a good job, like I just didn't. So yeah,
that's okay. That's why there's two of us.
Exactly. Redundancy. We're gonna get the details. So she's looking at something super intently, and what she's looking at is Paul and Stilgar who are walking away from the group.
Sandwalking away from the group. Her favorite drunk lizard.
Yeah. I measured their distance at about a ways away.
Uh-huh.
Yep. So we had some distance earlier.
Over yonder?
We had a couple. Oh, yeah. We had a distance of a yonder earlier. This one was about a ways away. And they're just sand walking across this flat plain of desert. And Stilgar stops them too.
They're sand walking up a giant dune.
They are. You're right. Sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I wrote flat plain in my notes. They are walking up a dune. Excuse me. And Stilgar says, Usul, I tune it myself, as he hands Paul what looks kind of like a fleshlight.
We know it's a thumper.
I know it's a thumper, but it's just like, Kind of looks like a fleshlight.
Also, we already know what a kind of like a fleshlight in this universe is with the sand compactor.
That is true. They look similar.
They do.
So he takes this object out, and it is indeed a thumper, and starts to hand it to Paul, and that's where our minute ends.
Yep.
Right there. So anything from Art and Soul on these minutes?
Everything from Art and Soul on these minutes is so much more focused on everything we're going to be talking about next week.
Okay.
And Art and Soul has a very dense section on next week's minutes of the movie. So we will definitely be talking a lot more Art and Soul and also extras from the movie next week as well.
Nice. Okay. Good deal. Well, I
have another observation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It seems that Paul and Stilgar have different dominant walking legs, because if you look at their sand walk patterns, mm-hmm. Stilgar does the wide sweep out with his left leg. Paul does the wide sweep out with his right leg. Stilgar does the diagonal step with his right leg, and Paul does the diagonal step with his left leg.
Huh. I wonder if it's like a handedness thing amongst the Fremen. I mean,
did you ever play soccer growing up?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have a dominant like kicking leg.
True, and it usually correlates to your hand.
Typically.
Yeah. I noticed that, and I attributed that to how they're walking together. Like, you don't want to...
Maybe.
You don't want to sweep the legs of the person beside you.
That could also be it. Yeah. But they are not walking entirely in unison with each other, which I guess would help with the breaking up of the 7/4 polyrhythm that is sand walking. So
yeah, there's this jazz duet they're playing right now.
Capital J jazz.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Yeah, I just attributed it because that Stilgar was on the left and Paul was on the right, and so the sweeping goes opposite of the person next to you. But that is an interesting question. Is there a foot dominance amongst the Fremen when they sandwalk?
That would stand to reason.
Yeah, I think that'd be a... it's fair. I'd buy that for a dollar, as I like to say.
Paul's just out there sweeping Stilgar's legs, getting yellow cards and warnings.
Yeah.
Does it more than once, he'll get a red card.
It's true.
Then he definitely won't ride Shai Hulud.
So... I have a fair amount of book notes this week.
And none of them are for today.
No, they are.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah. I would even go to say 80% of them are for today.
Oh, okay. Well, lay it on us.
This, what we see here in the books is, or what we're basically what we're covering in this minute is an entire chapter of the book. Now a lot of stuff has been left out of this chapter. So we do get some high points, but there's a lot of like trash talk on Alia that is not contained within or not shown in the movie. And I'm talking
mad shit.
Yeah. And I'll get to it here in a little while, but like most of what we see in the, in this week of minutes, the book kind of details it within like the first episode or two that we're going to cover this week. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to have a whole lot as we extend into the week. But right here at the beginning, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of set the scene.
It's a very front-loaded
very much for so.
Book minutes. All right.
Yeah, very much
or
so.
Book notes, not book minutes.
I'm a slow reader, so a book minute is like, you know, 2 or 3 pages for me.
Ah, fair.
So we get into this chapter of the book with Paul still struggling with his visions.
Sure.
As we see in the movie. But... as you can get with the book is a lot more specific with his, like what's going on in his brain. He's not so much concerned with what he's seeing. He's concerned with whether it's happened or is going to happen. Like what he's seeing.
Got it.
So he sees like, he thinks of like Chani preparing him this meal. Because it was like a heavy spice meal. And then he's like, no, but she already went to the Southern, hemisphere, or she went to the Southern Siege. And then he says, no, did that already happen? Or is that something that's going to happen? So he's wrestling with this like past, present, and future in his brain. And it's really kind of fucking him up right now. He is still waking up. So he's like coming out of this, this dream, this nightmare, this visions, whatever you want to call it. And he's thinking about certain conversations that he has had or maybe will have, or is having, I guess.
It's currently mid conversation and is like, have we talked about this yet?
Yeah, exactly. So he's really kind of like trying to find where he is in reality right now. So one of the visions that we see is, or we learn about is, Chani killing a man at the siege because the man was on the way to challenge Paul. And Paul was meditating at the time. And Chani, because she's a fucking badass in the books, just murks the guy before he can even get to Paul.
She's a badass in the movies too.
She is a different kind of badass.
Sure.
She's a much more secure badass in the books.
Our book Chani is much more developed at this point as well.
Yeah, very much so. So she just kills a dude. And then Paul's like, why the fuck did you do that? If he was coming for me, I should have been the person to do it. I don't need my woman taking care of my business, basically. It's a 60s man.
Yeah.
Misogyny. And then but she turns it right back around on him, and she's like, that dude wasn't worth your time, and if someone can't get past your woman, then they don't deserve to get to you.
Yeah.
And he's like, fair point.
In the siege, all are equal.
Yeah, in the siege, all are equal, exactly. So then, you know, Paul, like, he remembers this, and he's like, but did that already happen, or is that something that's going to happen? And he's like, okay, what about this conversation that I had with my mother? Because they, I guess in the book time, the most of the Fremen have already left the siege, and they have gone to the Southern Hemisphere.
Sure.
But he's thinking, did that already happen, or you know, is that something that's going to happen? This is a common thing that is repeated often in this chapter. That's why I'm repeating it as much as I am.
Sure. No, I mean... You're making a point.
Yeah. So he remembers this conversation with his mother, which that revolves around the complexities of basically ingratiating themselves within the Fremen religion and culture.
Mm-hmm.
And also how fucking weird Alia is. Because at this point in the books, she is about 2 years old.
I was wondering,
have we not brought that up yet?
We brought up that timelines were going to get weirder.
Okay.
And that we would talk about it later.
Okay.
I was wondering when we wanted to talk about it.
I think now's a fine time to do it. So between the last section of the book and this current section, there was about a 2-year time jump. So Alia has been born. She is growing up quickly. Everyone thinks she's fucking weird because she was born.
Spoilers, she's fucking weird.
Well, yeah, she was born with, you know, fully aware and fully conscious.
Yeah.
So she's like, you know, a 2-year old, but operates like she's, you know, in a fully grown adult. Yeah. So people think she's weird. this is part
no
of the
alphabet blocks for you, motherfucker.
So this is part of what Paul and his mom are talking about. But the main, it mainly revolves around, the religion and, politics mixing,
mm-hmm.
Which I have a passage that I want to read about that here in just a second. But when we talk about Alia, the thing that they said is that there was a group of Fremen people from the Southern Siege that went to Jessica, who is a full-fledged Reverend Mother amongst the Fremen at this point. And asked her to basically exorcise the demon that is inside of Alia. They view her as not natural.
Which, I mean, in fairness,
she's not exactly natural. This is weighing on Jessica, though. She thinks that, you know, she is a bad mom for, you know, putting her baby through what she went through. And Paul has to spend part of this conversation going, you're fine. You're not a bad mom. I understand.
But she kind of is.
Yeah. But you wouldn't tell your mother that. So when Paul kind of like wakes up from this fog that he's in.
Yeah.
The fog of time, if you will.
The fog of 2 years later.
Well, no, I'm talking about the fog of not knowing if it's the future, the present, or the past that he's experiencing.
I was making a joke, and you just had to go, actually.
Yeah. Well, according to the film books that I've read, he wakes up and he realizes that, oh, no, Chani is here. She is beside me. We're having a conversation, and I'm freaking out about my dreams.
Same.
So, yeah. So Chani explains that she is here with him in a couple of different capacities. Do we want to spoil that he's about to ride a worm? I think people know.
If you're listening to this, you've watched Dune Part 2.
So the big day that we...
Physically, I'm here. Mentally, I'm at Margaritaville with a cheeseburger in paradise.
Hell yeah, dude. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
that's what Chani's getting at.
Yeah. So she is... The big day that she referred to earlier is Paul is about to ride a worm. And spoiler alerts, we're not going to get to it this week.
We're going to get real close to it.
Another edging week for us.
Yeah.
So in the book, Chani is here in a couple different capacities. She is here as Sayadina, which she was made Sayadina after Jessica became Reverend Mother.
Yep.
So that's like her official title or official role in this week's worth of minutes. But she's also there as Paul's companion. You know, she is Paul's woman. So the Sayadina during a worm riding is really just there to witness. You cannot, you know, they're not supposed to help the rider. It's they're there for, you know, basically as a notary to sign off.
Yeah.
And say, yep, he did it.
Yeah, they're a professional witness in this case.
Exactly. But she's being torn because she cares about him. She's nervous for him. So she's trying to give him, like, advice and, you know, being, you know, just give him general advice. And Paul's like, are you sure you're supposed to be fucking doing that? Because because you're kind of like one of the race officials right now.
It's kind of some inside baseball here going on.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the umps betting on the game.
Right. And so she's, so we're going to get, you know, get to explore that internal conflict that she has.
Yeah.
More.
I know it's not directly Bene Gesserit, but I am kind of surprised that Denis didn't lean more into Chani's being a Sayadina.
Oh, he wanted to draw that firm line of she doesn't buy into all that BS.
I know. And I get it because of like, needed to develop a relationship and everything instead of Paul just kind of killing Jameis, crying about it, and then being accepted fully.
Right.
I get it. I just figured also could have been a decent through line to the Bene Gesserit story that Denis was trying to say. Not saying that Sayadina are Bene Gesserit because they're not, but it's
an offshoot.
Similar.
Yeah.
Job, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Maybe not, because I don't think the Sayadina were necessarily as much of a like political influence.
No,
as they were more of a religious and cultural influence.
They're definitely more religious and cultural, but if you know think about through lines, the Bene Gesserit heavily influenced the overall religion of the Fremen.
Slightly.
Yeah, slightly. And the Sayadina are a part of that. So
sure.
It's not like an A to B thing. It's like an A to C or A to D.
It's like an A to Q thing.
Yeah, sure, whatever. But yeah, I mean, you can put them in the same you know, general ballpark, I guess.
I guess it was just better for the movie to write it as a enemies to lovers kind of thing.
Yes, and think of your average film going audience and are they able to keep that distinction in their mind all of the time?
No.
Are they able to hold those two things as equal? No. So it's better to make it a clear distinction.
I want a Dune movie written for Dune fans.
We got it. It's the 2000 miniseries.
Yeah, that's true.
So the last thing that I wanted to note that, happens in this conversation between Chani and Paul is that we get the first like concrete mentions of Leto II the First.
In the book. In the book. Not in the movie.
Yes, in the book.
Because Leto II, the first, is not here.
No, no. But they talk about their son. They talk about their son, Leto, and how he's growing up, and he's, you know, going to be a strong man one day.
He's certainly going to be a big, strong man one day that's going to have a great life. That's
great long life.
Going to, you know, he's going to do a lot of good things.
Yep. Excited to see how this plays out. So that's really the conversation that we get between the two of them. And like I said, we get a little bit more, it shifts from the conversation between the two of them to the conversation that we get with Stilgar later. So I'm going to hold off on that.
Yep.
Sorry, until tomorrow.
I'm just imagining a baby, but with like Oscar Isaac's face with like the beard and everything.
Oh, just a fully bearded baby.
Fully bearded baby. Hell Oscar yeah. Isaac head. Yeah.
I love it. All right, cool. Well, this episode has gone long, so let's wrap it up and get back tomorrow so we can figure out what exactly is the rest of this conversation between Paul and Stilgar.
Yeah, absolutely. In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute on Blue Sky. We are at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us that way. We will be back with another episode tomorrow.
All right, see you then.
See ya.